Welcome to the Permatemp Corporation. A presentation of the audio podcast, This Is Actually Happening. Episode 53. What if September 11th changed everything?
You were kind of doing everything that everybody else expected you to be doing, which was to get married and have kids and get a job. A lot of my friends inherited family businesses. We didn't have that. So a lot of people went to Wall Street, you know, looking to make money. And that's what I did. It was predictable. It was sort of pre-planned. I look back on it now. It's very strange. I have no idea who that person was. Some straight, conservative, white, preppy, wannabe Wall Street finance guy that was just trying to keep pace with the Joneses and have the right car and the right neighborhood and the right golf club and all of the bullshit that I believed in was what I was supposed to be doing and going for and getting and accumulating. From political to moral, religious, I have no connection with who I was in 2001 and what I am 13, 14 years later. Don't know him. I don't know if I care to know him. I don't think I liked him very much. I was in my house. My son was dropped off at daycare. It was about 8:30 in the morning, and I was dressed and ready to go to meetings at a Merrill Lynch office in Long Island. And it was a gorgeous day, and I was just watching CNN, turned it on, and I saw this massive thing going on down at the Trade Center, and someone said a small plane or possibly a helicopter had hit in the building, and I remember looking at this and just trying to understand. You know, I didn't get it that it was a terrorist attack. It didn't make sense to me. I just wasn't wrapping my head around it. At some point when you're talking to people on the phone, then all of a sudden when the second tower got hit, watching that live, it was just surreal. And I was with Morgan Stanley at the time, like many of the people I know. So I would work from home, but I would often go into the city, into the Trade Center, to do the training classes because I was the New York rep. And when they hired all these new financial consultants from around the country, they'd bring them into New York. So I would go in and represent one of the product groups and train the brokers on how to sell it, basically. Plus our offices were there. So, you know, went there often and just wasn't there that day. It was on Long Island, like many people. That started a pretty big sea change in a lot of people's lives, including mine. Everybody knew somebody. I was very fortunate. Most of my friends and family accounted for, but lost a few people I knew. One girl from college, her name was Beth, and some people I knew on Long Island lost their 22, 23-year-old sons that were just starting their careers out at some of these investment banking houses. Just their prime of their life, just getting going. And I remember going to those wakes and stuff like that, and it was just it was terrible. The strangest thing was meeting people on the train that you commuted with. And I left from Cold Spring Harbor. I used to take the 5:35 a.m. You end up meeting people that you just you have an affinity with because they're on the train with you. You don't know their last name. You have an idea of where they work, but there's Joe, there's Tom, there's Mary, there's Bob. And you're like, hey, good morning, how are you? Good, just, you know, that kind of stuff. Like your commuting family. And then you go back a few months later after 9/11, then there was people that were like no longer on the train commuting, and you'd like ask somebody like, hey, where's so-and-so? And they'd like, no, he didn't. He was in the tower. Oh, okay. And there was a number of folks like that. Yeah. It was not a fun place to be.
It wasn't. And I really didn't have any desire to go back into the city anymore. So we ended up moving south, really. I knew that I was going to get, like, I was negotiating some sort of severance package. People were not going back to work. The market was very weak. Wholesaling jobs that I had were being eliminated. People were getting laid off. But I sat home for about 6 months after that, and they handed out severance packages. They were trying to figure out what they were going to be doing, along with tons of other businesses, the city itself, the country, right? It was a crazy time. My wife at the time's family had moved to Orlando and were part of a cable business and were interested in having us come down and join them. And we moved to Orlando. That April, we went. Part of that was, I think, was also just like deciding to have a complete redo and a restart and change everything. And maybe not have to deal with or answer some of the stuff that I was doing in New York. There was a lot of turmoil inside, in my head and in my soul. And I thought to myself, wow, what a great opportunity. I can bring her down here. We can sort of restart. She'll be closer to her parents. And all of that shenanigans that was going on, I can leave behind and get focused and you know, be a father and be a husband. I wasn't saying that to anyone else. I didn't tell her that. I didn't tell anybody that. I just told myself, you know, you can use this as an opportunity to cut the bullshit and get serious, because, you know, you can't be gay. And it was good for a while. But it's just geography, because you're still bringing all that luggage. I was working in a family business that was run by her uncle. He was a very successful executive in telecommunications, and he was opening up some smaller businesses in his retirement, and one of them was cable contracting, really. It was contract work. Where the Time Warners, the Comcasts of the world, typically when you call up for an installation, it's a contractor that shows, typically not an actual employee. It's really contracted out. And that's what I ended up going in, was to help them run this small cable contracting company. I think they was like 50 or 60 techs. It was a cowboy mentality, redneck, Riviera craziness in Orlando. I'm proud to say that after about 2 years of working there, we changed that, and we added some diversity, and we hired people that looked like our customers and spoke like our customers and were multilingual, as opposed to what was there when we got there, and that was a little painful. It was a good little business. They kept busy. They made good money, but it was not a professional business. There's no upward mobility in that world. There was no real future for me, and lonely and frustrated and not remotely attracted to my wife at the time. I never turned around and said to myself, oh my God, you're gay. Hopefully nobody finds out. I didn't say that to myself until I was in Florida on that day in my Jeep, having just left getting a massage from a very handsome man, which led to some other things. And I remember telling myself in the car, wow, you're so gay. You're stone cold sober. It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. You're gay. You're gay. You're gay. You're so gay. What are you going to do about it? And I physically said that out loud while I was driving. This is absolutely ridiculous. What are you going to do? Are you going to wait until you're 60? And have this absolute misery taking place, and this guilt and this self-loathing? You're gonna come out when you're 60 and tell her, so then she can look back and say, holy crap, my entire existence with you was a fraud? Or are you gonna take your Jeep and you're gonna drive it into this pole? What are you gonna do? At the same time that was taking place, I had discovered
in this small mom and pop business that we were running, and it was myself and my ex-father-in-law at the time, owned by his older brother, that he was fleecing the company. He was just ripping his brother off. Bad. It was really painful. Very, very painful. And there was a lot at risk, and a lot of people's jobs are at risk, and there was just some really poor corporate malfeasance. And I put it all out, and I notified his brother, and I gave him all the information. I said, do what you will with it. I said, but I don't want any part of this. I don't want to work here anymore. But it was, at the same time that I was doing that, pointing out what this guy was doing, I was cheating on his daughter. I was pointing the finger at him like, I cannot believe you are stealing money and threatening the solvency of this small business that we all need for a paycheck because you want to drive around in a new Cadillac and own an oceanfront condo. But you've got to fucking be kidding me. And his sense of entitlement was insane. And I'll never forget it. I mean, I basically ran the company. I didn't even get a bonus or something. I just remember getting some check at the end of the year after all this hard work and doubling some revenue and doing all this other stuff and cleaning the business up so it ran professionally. And I did that. He didn't. But he certainly took all the money. And so I went in on Saturday and I busted into the controller, the lady who worked for us, who did the books, and I did some homework and I said, something's not right here. You know, I know what the business makes. There's no way how's he living this lifestyle? This is insane. And there it was. It was just so poorly hidden too. It was just a constant monthly systematic fleecing. And I was furious with him. I was so furious with him because people always said that he was like that. And I defended him to my family. And it was just such egg in the face. I was like, wow, this is unbelievable. And a part of me was like, I can't believe I'm sacrificing so much of my... I mean, that's how fucked up I was, right? I was saying, I can't believe I'm sacrificing so much of my own happiness by not coming out and staying with her and playing this role. And this is the thanks I get, is this guy is a thief, you know? He's a cheap dime store. You know what? I'm going to give him up, and I'm going to come out. Fuck this, right? That's where my went, because I went like that line from The Shawshank, get busy living or get busy dying. And I said, I'm going to get busy living. This is crazy. I can't be part of this anymore. I was 34, 35 at the time. And I was like, you got to deal with this. So we had a couple of rough months, and we went through. We started that whole process of a separation. We have kids. I had my son. I just could not. My daughter was one, but my son was 6, 7 years old. Oh man, he was just so beautiful. He was such a good kid, and nobody wants. Nobody wants to be the gay dad at Little League. Which really sounds completely self-absorbed because most people really don't care, right? Most reasonable people don't care, and they're really not thinking about me that way. But that's this, you're so messed up in the head because of the fear, and you don't want to do that to your kids, to your children, what they're going to go through. So you just kept it bottled, but I had to. I was going to implode. And so I moved out, and I told her that I wasn't in love with her anymore. And I told her that I needed a break. And it was happening at the same time where I had shared with her, this ridiculous stuff going on with your father and this financial crap that's taking place and this thievery. And I just need a break from this entire clan of people, and I'm moving out. She said, I don't know what's going on here, but... you either are in love with another person, you got somebody pregnant, or you're gay. And I'm pretty sure you're gay. And I just looked at it and I said, I'm just not prepared to discuss it. But when I am ready to discuss why, it will be with you first. I didn't come out until months later after we mediated the divorce. I lived alone in an apartment about 2 miles from the house. As soon as that was over, I waited probably another month or so, and when I was ready to sit with her and talk with her, that's when I sat down and I told her everything. So my gay life and growing up was suppression, to be honest with you. You know, you're 12, 13 years old, and you absolutely find boys attractive. That's gay. Well, you know, I don't recall any positive image of gay life, gay men, anywhere in my youth. Even in college, I did not have any relationships with men. I used women probably to fuck myself straight when I look back on it today at 45 years of age. Of what were you like when you were 18, 19, 20, 21, 22? I was like a drunk idiot frat boy. That was quite embarrassing when I look back on it today. Go to college, drink, have fun, get a job, get married, have a kid, buy a house, get a car, go make money. And I was going to do that over here, but over here on this side, that was when nobody knew what I was doing, and it was just for me. So I kept it very well hidden. And I would go into New York, and I'd go into the city where it was safe, and I'd go to the village, and nobody knew me. And I could just be a different person. You put yourself in positions and places that you really don't want to ever admit to. It's a terrible, terrible place. But when you're forced to hide that sexual need and that desire of what you want, you know, you'll get very desperate to find it and then to get it any way you can, right? You do some really poor decisions. It was hell. It was absolute hell. Pure, just the guilt. But it didn't stop me, right? So I kept going back, right? It's very, 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 very strange. Because the feelings and the guilt and the remorse were awful. I drank a lot. It was nasty. I got fat. I put on weight. I was unhappy. I was cranky. I probably was a miserable SOB to live with and didn't realize that. I'm sure today, you know, if you spoke to my ex-wife, that, you know, she just thought it was normal that that's how relationships should take place. But there was, you know, disappearance, money, spending. What was I doing? Why was I coming home late? Where was I at? I should donate my brain to science, see what the fuck they find in there. I don't know what the hell I was thinking. It's crazy. You can't let that stuff fester because it's poison. It's poison to your soul, right? If you're just totally lying to yourself and everybody else and you're not, it's just a terrible place to be. And I'd imagine it's what purgatory is, if there is a purgatory, because, you know, I wasn't moving forward. I mean, you're round peg in a square hole. You just don't fit. And you're vexed, right? Your whole life, you're vexed. You're fighting something. I say it's under the surface because I kept it well hidden, but people close to me knew. So for me, I thought it was under the surface that everyone thought that I was a normal, well-adjusted, average guy. But some people, like my sisters, certainly picked up on it. So, you know, we're not shocked. We knew there was something, but I don't know what my cousins knew, or from what I've been told, like, it came out. It was like people were just completely shocked. I mean, my friends were just blown away. Especially my college friends, they were like, "What?" They just couldn't get it. I mean, I talked to them all. I still see them, and they're great. But they were like, "What?" You know, I can't speak for her, but I can certainly understand the amount of pain and turmoil that she was going in, because as I was breaking her heart, because she did not want to get divorced, she would naturally go to the man that protected her whole life, which was her father. just like I would want my daughter to do. I'm sure that she was not happy about some of the things that he did, but I don't believe there was really any repercussion. You know, she didn't want to know. I mean, it's best I can way describe it is that when I told her what was going on, she just wanted no part of it. It's just, some people are just absolutely in denial. Put it this way, if she found all of the documents that I had found, nobody would have known about it. It would have been covered. Maybe that's what you do for your dad. He just wasn't my dad. He was my boss. I think the greatest gift I gave him was coming out at the same time, basically, like a few months later. Because a lot of the attention about what he had done, and it was bad, and there's probably one or two laws that were broken that he got away with because his brother forgave him. Holy shit, my daughter's husband is gay. He's leaving my daughter because he's a faggot. You know, all that attention and all that negativity and all that family turmoil all focused on me. Forget what he did. Doesn't matter if he stole hundreds of thousands of dollars and all that kind of shit. That's over with. You're the problem. I did resent the fact that subsequently when I left the company, he made it extremely difficult for me to make a living the second that all went down. And then it was a systematic behind the scenes like takedown on where I was working. And he would harass the owners of that company on a weekly basis. A weekly basis. Till finally they had enough and they said, we can't deal with them anymore. We have to let you go. There was another big piece that was coming to the surface, which was I was not enjoying these sexual encounters, if you want to call them. I wanted more. I wanted a relationship. I actually wanted a relationship with a man. That's what I was dying for. See, sounds a little weird even saying it today. I rarely don't say that publicly, but what I was really dying, I was yearning for a relationship with a man and to wake up and be with a man and live with a man. The ex-wife fell in love and met someone who lived in another town. She wanted to move there, still in Florida. And I said, okay, I'll follow. And I did, for the kids. She got remarried. I had one or two relationships during that last 7-year period. But I got to live my life, and I got to be who I am. And I have two kids that are 16 and 10, and knew from day one that when I was leaving and why mom and dad are divorced, that we explained to them right up front that, well, dad's gay. And, you know, him and mommy are no longer going to live together. I have a great person in my life today, and I have two terrific kids. I'm really, it's outstanding. I have no idea what would be going on in my life right now if, like, 9/11 doesn't happen and what that impact had in my little world, in my life. You know, that particular day, how that set so many other things in motion. But if 9/11 doesn't happen, I'm still working on Wall Street and nothing's changed. Nothing. If that doesn't happen, I'm not out of a job. I'm not moving to Florida. Nothing else has happened. And I can't tell you for sure where I would be. I probably would be in Long Island, working, married, and randomly cheating on my wife. That was probably going to be the existence of when, and I, that's what I've, that would have been my wonderful legacy. What a nightmare. That's a nightmare. That's not a life. I have no idea. I have no idea how it would have played out. I don't know. I'm very blessed, you know? I really do like my life today. I feel like it's my life.